A couch potato warning is in effect as DirecTV transforms Thanksgiving into Streamsgiving. DirecTV's got free TV nationwide. With a heavy front of 60-plus live channels and a steady stream of streaming apps, conditions are perfect for nonstop entertainment. So hunker down on the couch and sign up for your free trial of My Entertainment from DirecTV. I'm going to watch some free TV.
Start streaming My Entertainment from DirecTV now at streamsgiving.com. My free is free. Paid services. 5-day free trial, then auto-renews monthly. Cancel anytime. Temporary credit hold may apply. Restrictions apply. See streamsgiving.com for details. AI produced.
SpinQuest Social Casino. It's Thanksgiving time. The turkey's hot and the family's loud. Instead of football, play a different game on your phone. Live dealer blackjack, craps, and slots. Play anytime, anywhere. SpinQuest.com. This Thanksgiving, gobble up a $30 coin pack for just $10. Come play today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Today on The Grave Talks, the haunted White House. The White House, yes, that White House is very haunted. It's one of the most iconic haunted homes on the planet. Decisions that have shaped the face of the earth and societies that live in it have been made there. As it turns out, many of those decision makers who once walked its halls in life still linger there today. Abraham Lincoln, Andrew Jackson, and many others still seem to have a purpose in the most powerful house on the planet, long after their passing. Today, we talk with paranormal storyteller Jeff Belanger about the ghosts and the shocking accounts of the dead who still wander the halls of the haunted White House.
I was started writing books back in 2004, mm-hmm. and my very first book was called The World's Most Haunted Places. I forgot. It was a long time ago. Already the memory's fading. And so I covered short stories on places all over the world, and one of the chapters was the White House. And I thought, oh my gosh, there's so much more here. I just can't cover it in a chapter. And I never stopped thinking about it. I love history and I love reliable witnesses. And when it comes to both of those things, the White House just kind of comes together on those topics. Not necessarily the presidents, mind you, as far as reliable witnesses, but there's a whole group of staff that work there, like 100 people that are the butlers, the groundskeepers, the cleaning crew, the foreman, all these people who they're not appointed by any one political party. They work for the White House and they are vetted. They're drug tested, psych screened, evaluated. And so many of them have stories about ghosts of the White House, and they keep coming up, and they've been coming up for over 100 years. And the other thing about the White House is that everything is so well documented. Every president has his own presidential library where they keep every record of everything. And so everything that takes place in that building is checked and double checked. It's written down and so on. And so many of these stories are chronicled by really reliable people. And so I just started digging on one story and then finding another. And I just said, man, this is too good to be true. And just started collecting all these tales.
What an interesting thing, because that's obviously one of the biggest, you know, issues when you're trying to document something or present something is finding a reliable individual who can speak, you know, has been tested, has been gone through the ringer of this is a reliable person. And then the documentation of it, it's beyond just word of mouth.
Yeah. And I think with any story, I started as a journalist. That's how I got it started in all this stuff. I was a newspaper reporter, a features writer, and I love gathering real stories. It's kind of my thing. And sure. So as a journalist, you kind of get a sense for, number one, when people are just lying to you or when they're delusional or whatever. But the other part of journalism is looking for multiple sources, you know, multiple people telling you the same story that's pretty close to the same narrative. And that comes up in a place like the White House. You've got military aides writing in their memoirs about certain stories, and they're not writing ghost books, right? They're writing their memoirs. And you've got presidents talking about it in letters to their spouses, and you've got people talking about it in interviews. It just keeps coming up, and I love that. And the interesting thing, too, is especially in regard to the White House, if anything, people have something to lose by sharing these stories. Mm-hmm. Nothing to gain, right? You're not going to gain voters. I don't think the ghost block, I don't think we're a really good voting block. No one's courted us yet anyway.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for that. So if you come out and say, yeah, I think this building's haunted, there's a lot of people in this country that will think less of you. Not me. I'd be thrilled.
Sure.
But I think that it's still not quite okay to talk about at that level.
When something like this is documented, beyond just in an interview or beyond something that's publicly out there, but something where someone, a cleaning person, has to document something that happened that they could not explain, what does that look like in documentation form? Are they trying to find an explanation, or is it just this happened? When you were going through your research, what did you find?
Well, keep in mind, a lot of these stories are indeed folklore, meaning they're passed down orally from one person to another.
Okay.
But what's interesting to me is to find the people that are still living that will tell you the story. No, this is what I saw. This is what I experienced. That, and it's just an eyewitness testimony. That's all we have. However, there have been some presidents, Harry S. Truman to be specific, who wrote down in multiple letters to his wife about the place being haunted. And those letters are available to all Americans. They're in his library. They're in my book if you want to save yourself the trouble. But those letters, just to kind of paraphrase the president, he talked about how one night he went to bed. And at the White House, there's always someone on the first floor. That's the museum level. That's where people can tour. Lots of meetings take place there. Secret Service are on staff all the time, 24/7. The president lives up on the upper floors. And there's a big effort to make sure that can be as much of a home as possible for any president, because you're in a fishbowl. It can't be the kind of life that really I wouldn't want it. I wouldn't want to live there. You know, I mean, and that's why I won't run for president, by the way. I don't want to live in the White House. It's haunted. I'd be creeped out. So they maintain the privacy as much as possible. So Truman's up there all by himself, and he hears people walking around, to the point where he gets up, goes downstairs, finds the officer on duty and says, "What are you doing upstairs?" And he said, "Sir, we're not upstairs. We're down here at our post like we're supposed to be." And the president heard these footsteps again and again. And as he said to his wife, I quote, "It sure is shooting. The place is haunted." And I love that. I love that that's the conclusion he drew while living there in that building, that really historic building. And I don't know, Tony, have you ever been to it? Have you ever been to the White House?
I've been outside of it, but I've never been in it.
So I got to go as part of the research for this. And it was a funny story. When I first thought about the idea of the book, I called the main number. This is, you know, the listed phone number for the White House.
Sure.
And someone answers on like the second ring, a human, has no prompts or anything. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Yeah, I'm an author interested in writing a book about the ghost of the White House, and I'd like to talk to somebody in charge."
Yeah.
And she's, it's 2 seconds, right? She's like, "Okay, yeah, hold on 1 second." And the phone rings again, and I'm talking to the boss. And the boss is the chief usher of the White House, not the president. The president doesn't run that building. The chief usher does. And at that point, I think there'd only been 5 chief ushers ever.
Like, oh, wow.
Yeah. So this chief usher had served every president since Nixon. And this was the George W. Bush presidency when I went there. And he said, "Yeah, hello." And I'm like, "Oh, my God, if you called my mother's office, it's way harder to get connected to her." So I said, "Hey, I want to do a book about the ghost of the White House." And he said, "Yeah, we're not interested." And I said, "Wait, it's a children's book for like middle readers, and we're going to use ghosts as an innovative way to teach history to kids." Mm-hmm. And he says, "Go on." And then it turned out that I knew a friend of his daughter's who went to school up in Boston near me. And we got to talking and he's like, all right, come on down. And so I had to submit to a background check, and through some help from my local congressman and so on, I got to go down there with pretty short notice and do the official tour, but then also meet with the chief usher and interview him and interview some of the staff. And it was incredible to be inside that building as a history nerd. You walk in and like when I was standing in the North Portico, like the main entrance there on the north side of the building, and you think every single U.S. president stood exactly where I'm standing, every one of them. I know Washington died before it was completed, but still, he laid the cornerstone. He was there. Mm-hmm. Every president, you feel that. I mean, there's a power to that building. And I think that that's a big part of what a haunting is, right? Is it's a building with a story to tell.
Yeah.
It's a building with memories. It's a building where something left an impression, left a mark. And those walls do talk. And it's incredible. It was absolutely amazing to just walk through it and remind myself, I'm in the White House. You know, this is where all these presidents have been. Decisions that have changed the very nature of the world we live in. It's a powerful place, completely amazing. And I can't recommend it enough if you get the chance.
When you got a chance to sit down and have that conversation with the chief usher, how did that go? How open are they on the acceptance of this being a fact of what goes on in the White House?
Tony, that's what blew me away more than the North Portico and all the presidents, right? So we go back to the chief usher's office, Gary Walters. He's since retired. And I said, so this is what I'm working on. And I brought a little cassette recorder to record our conversation for my notes, which had to go through its own security screening to make sure it wasn't a bomb or anything like that. It was amazing, like how thorough everybody was. And we start talking. And I said, so have you had a ghost experience? He said, oh, yeah, something weird happened to me. And he described this story. And I know your show, you've had so many great ghost experiences on your show that if you're going to rank all of them, I promise you this will be the dead last lamest.
But it's in the White House, so it goes right up there.
Right. Everybody, you know, put on your seatbelts. Here we go. So he's telling me that he's standing on the main level, standing next to a police officer, and they're at their post. And there's doors that are held open by magnets. You know, there's like a magnet up high that holds the door open, those powerful magnets. Mm-hmm. So in the case of a fire or whatever, they can shut the doors automatically. He said, suddenly this big rush of wind goes by right between the two of them, and it blows this door off this powerful magnet and shuts it. I know, right? And so I went, okay, wow. And while as ghost stories go, I admit that's pretty low on the scale. But it's the White House.
Yeah.
Doors don't close on their own. This doesn't happen. He's worked there for decades. You know, he's been in that building more than any president. If you consider 40, 50, 60 hours a week times 25 years, that's going to add up more than even a two-term president who, you know, lives there. Mm-hmm. So for him to say this has never happened before, it's never happened since, it was out of the ordinary, then it suddenly has a little more weight to it. And this guy is reliable, right? Drug tested, psych screened, because he's around foreign heads of state and the president and everything. And that was his story. But then I met an usher who was a third generation butler at the White House. His dad was a butler at the White House, his dad's dad. And these guys, it's amazing to me how open they were to talk about ghosts. And then I realized they're completely apolitical. I don't think they watch the news. They're patriots beyond belief, historians, patriots, amazing individuals. But there's just no way you could be watching CNN or Fox News or any of that stuff and do that job, right?
Because
even if you voted for the guy, like, he's going to do something stupid along the way. They all have, mm-hmm. you know, and you're going to bring him coffee. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you SOB, right? Here's your coffee. Way too much sugar this morning because I know you hate that. But so they were very open. And I realized, I heard a story too about a butler who had, it was actually Barbara Bush who told the story about their first week in office. And this is George H.W. Bush, the first Bush presidency. Mm-hmm. And they were just a week in office. And one of the butlers walks up to the first lady and says, what does the old man want for lunch? And she's indignant telling the story, saying, that's the president of the United States you're talking about. And the butler just smiles and says, ma'am, presidents come and go, but butlers stay here forever. And I think he just hit this point, you know, like these people, they work there. They would have to do an awful lot to get fired from their job. So they can talk about ghosts.
Yeah.
They could talk about how, the chief foreman was on the second floor turning on the lights one morning, which is part of his duty. And he says he suddenly sees Abraham Lincoln sitting in a chair right outside of the Lincoln bedroom with his hands crossed on his legs and his feet together, and looks right at him and then disappears. And you go, whoa, right? I mean, First of all, we all know what Lincoln looks like. He's on our money. And second of all, this is the place. And he comes downstairs and he reports to his superior, I just saw Lincoln on the second floor. And he's told, you're just one of many that has seen this. And back to work you go. And that's, I love that. I love that ghosts can be reduced to a matter-of-fact experience. Right. It doesn't have to mean you're crazy. It doesn't have to mean anything. It just means that this thing was there and you were there and you saw it and you had this profound experience that really changes you forever.
Of course. How far back do the ghost stories go? Like, what is the earliest documented or even just word of mouth occurrence in the White House related to the paranormal?
So there's one story that I can't put a date on, but you could argue goes back the furthest. And that I was talking to a Secret Service agent who was doing the tours, and these guys were amazing. They knew every piece of furniture. Like, that was created in 1787 in Roanoke, Virginia, and brought here as a gift from so and so. This rug was brought in 1994, by the Clintons or whatever. He knew everything. And I said, well, what do you know about the ghosts here? And without changing the tone of his voice at all, he said, well, people report seeing a British redcoat out near the North Portico. And I went, oh, well, you said that in the same tone of voice as you talked about the carpet and the chair and the desk. And I said, is this like federal recognition of the proof of ghosts? And he looks at me and he goes, sir, I don't know what you're talking about. And I went, okay, well, I'm not going to press it. So the British Redcoat ghost, in August of 1814, the White House was burned to the ground during the War of 1812. The British sacked Washington. They burned it up. The White House, of course, had thick stone walls, so those stayed standing, but everything inside was gutted. The White House was reduced to ashes on the interior. And people report seeing this British redcoat, sometimes carrying a torch, and it harkens back to that specific event. And this comes down to like one of the big questions, what is a ghost? And I think in some cases, a ghost is history demanding to be remembered. It's a story that gets passed around to this day because the moral is don't let your guard down. It's happened before. The British came here and trashed the city, burned it to the ground, almost, wiped out this brand new democracy that we had. So that ghost, whether it's real or not, it's something that they're happy to tell the story because it's a reminder. It wouldn't be the first time. And speaking of that fire, there's two parts of the building. There's a window on the north side and a window on the south side where they don't paint it every year. There still shows the burn marks from 1814. And I think the reason they do that is the same reason they still tell this story of the British redcoat, because it's a warning. It's happened before. Look at the window. Look at the burn marks. Look at this story. So that one, you could argue, comes anytime after 1814. But the first really documented ghost that I found would be dated to the 1860s. And that's when young Willie Lincoln died in the White House. President Abraham Lincoln, of course, Mary Todd, they lost a child to this typhoid-like disease inside the White House while they were serving office. Mm-hmm. And it really broke up the family. I mean, Abraham Lincoln seems like one of those presidents that really enjoyed the White House, his position. His kids would build forts on the roof. Americans would send pets as gifts to the kids, from rabbits and all kinds of animals and so on. And they all seemed to really love the whole experience of it and what it meant. And so they were really distraught over this. Mary Todd Lincoln was holding seances in the White House to try to connect with the spirit of her son. And we know the president attended at least one of them because it made the papers. And even back then in the 1860s, the papers were like, hey, this is kind of crazy, this president going to a seance. This isn't, we expect more from our president than this. And so he went to these seances, or at least one. And you could say, well, that's a seance, could have been a charlatan. And then Mary Todd Lincoln is having these dreams where she's waking up in the middle of the night and she sees her son standing at the foot of her bed with his brother, with his uncle Alec, who also died as a child. And she wrote about these experiences in letters to her sister. And she would say, "He lives, Emily, he lives." And then would go on to describe how she sees him and he comes each night, and it gives her great comfort to know that he's not alone. He's with his uncle Alec off in the spirit world. And isn't that wonderful? And while that, you could say, is just a distraught mother, and Mary Todd Lincoln, if you know about her historically, was, you know, she might have been a few sandwiches shy of a picnic. She had issues. She truly did. Mm-hmm. So you could say just distraught mother. But then if you fast forward about 40 years, a military aide was visiting the White House and wrote in his memoirs about the staff telling him it's haunted by the ghost of a little boy. And he doesn't mention Willie Lincoln, but Willie Lincoln is the only little boy who died there. So that ghost comes up again 40 years later. And suddenly you go, whoa, maybe it's not just a distraught mother. Maybe we're talking about something that's really in that building. And so to me, you know, 1860s, mom writing it in a letter, to early 1900s, a military aide writing it in his memoirs. And I would say that story to me has the most credence.
That's really interesting. And when we look now at haunting situations in more modern times, a lot of times one of the questions that gets brought up is, well, how did this start? When did this start? Was there an event that occurred that maybe triggered these things to be able to come into a home or wherever the haunting may be? Do you think that it's possible that Mary Todd Lincoln, by having seances in the White House and being, you know, one of the early residents there, do you think that she could have been the one who possibly opened up some sort of a door for not only her son to come back, but for all of the subsequent hauntings throughout the years?
I don't think you can blame them all on her.
Sure.
Her son, maybe. And, I, you know, also, like, again, what is a ghost? It's such a huge question.
Yeah.
You know, it's I think in some cases a ghost is literally a mark, a stain, whatever word you want to use, left on a location. And we pick up on it because you should have human empathy. That's what a good functioning person has. If you lack it, you're literally a psychopath. Mm-hmm. So empathy means that you can walk into a room and you can see someone acting through some emotion. Maybe they're upset and crying. And as a human being, even if you don't know that person, you should hopefully feel some angst and see if you can offer some comfort, because that's what humans do. Mm-hmm. I believe that empathy carries over even when the people aren't there anymore. Even when they're dead, even when they've been gone over a century, you walk into this building and you imagine what it must have been like living in a fishbowl, and your son dies, you know, your child dies, and you've got to deal with that and still deal with this extremely public job. That I can't even imagine. I can't imagine losing a child under any circumstances. And that, it just seems to be worse. And so I start tuning into those emotions of Mary Todd and tuning in to what it must have been like when Willie was alive. And I wonder if I summon him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If that's the role that we play when we go into these places, when you know what happened, you are literally summoning up the past, whether you're seeing it as kind of like a movie that replays over and over again, or summoning it to the point where it's interacting. I don't know. I don't have those answers, but I do know that a lot of people have these experiences, and I think it has a lot more to do with these human connections that we all have with each other, whether you choose to ignore them or not. You can focus on what divides us, or you could focus on the fact that we all breathe the same air and eat the same food and so on. I think we're a lot more interconnected as a species than people want to give us credit for.
Quite often there's two things that get brought up is it a residual haunting, or is it a conscious entity? Is it something that has control over what it's doing and is currently interacting with us on this side? When it comes to the White House and more specifically down to the Lincoln haunting and his son and those sort of occurrences, what do you feel, based on the research people are experiencing? Does this seem more of a residual, more of a movie playing itself over and over, or does there seem to be some conscious interaction?
I think there's both there. Mm-hmm. In regard to Lincoln, I think every U.S. president that has any sort of appreciation of history and understanding of it summons him, summons Lincoln. And the reason for that is that Abraham Lincoln's presidency was hands down the most difficult of all. There's not even a close second. You know, you've got a nation at war with itself, the Civil War. Tens of thousands of Americans are dying all the time. The Union's being ripped apart. His son dies while in office. And then, of course, he paid the ultimate price. He's assassinated, and died for his country and for his office. It's never been that bad on any other president before or since. And I remember seeing an interview with George H.W. Bush, the first Bush, who was talking about the first time in office, he had to send some troops into harm's way. And he was really struggling with the decision, like, oh, my gosh, people could die. People on the other side, American soldiers could die. And he was struggling with this. And then he said, and then I thought about what Abraham Lincoln went through. And I took a deep breath and I went, OK, I can get through this. I think these presidents need Lincoln standing over their shoulders to say, OK, Mr. President, tell me how bad it can be. Remind me,
yeah.
You know, sit here with me. I need you. I need you when it gets tough, because that's how bad it can be. And what I'm going through now kind of pales in comparison to whatever you went through. And so that's why I think it's so important that we appreciate these stories, these ghosts, this history, because there's so much we can learn from it, so much comfort we can take from it. And I think that's just yet another service that ghosts and spirits and these stories and legends offer us.
Are there any specific areas of the White House where Lincoln specifically is seen on a regular basis? I know one of the more common that we hear in just popular culture is the Lincoln bedroom. I mean, of course, Lincoln's in the name, but is that truly one of the more popular areas, or are there other areas of the White House where he's seen?
Yeah, the Lincoln bedroom is the most popular, and for reasons that a lot of people may not guess at first, that was never Lincoln's bedroom.
Sure.
Some of their furniture is in there. However, that used to be the executive office. Back before there was the East and West Wings, the offices were all in that main building, as were the living quarters. It was a lot more cramped and crowded. So this was Lincoln's office. This is where he would have paced the halls, getting reports from the front on the Civil War, all kinds of things. That would have been the room where he would have done most of his business, most of his thinking. And so that's the room that comes up most often. And there's other stories, too. Another butler talked about how the chandelier would be swinging when he walked into the room. And again, that may not sound like the most groundbreaking ghost story. However, it's the White House. Things aren't supposed to be shaking, swinging, unless unless someone approved that, damn it, and stamped it, and so on. And the lights flicker and stuff like that. And to me, that's a good one, right? Lights flicker in my house, but for all I know, I got to rewire a few things. But the White House, there should be no fire hazards. There should be no wires that need flickering because, someone just turned on the dishwasher in the basement. This is the White House. They got stuff in there so top secret, we can't even imagine it yet. So suddenly these little touches of ghostly elements become a lot more profound in a building like the White House.
Who are some of the other spirits who are haunting the White House that get brought up in your book and that people talk about in your research?
There's Andrew Jackson, who was really quite a character. He was like the first like populist president. He invited people in off the street to his inaugural ball in the White House, and that went probably as good as you can imagine. People were stealing stuff. They were ripping curtains and taking it as souvenirs, tracking mud everywhere, right? It was a disaster.
Yeah.
But he was just that kind of guy, like, hey, let's, be of the people. And an angry guy. He didn't like to be told what to do. He was the president. And so his voice has been heard booming in some of the rooms. And so that's kind of like more of an auditory thing. There's Dolly Madison has been seen out near the Rose Garden. She was quite fond of it and didn't like the idea of it being messed with. There's even a black cat that's been seen. And this one's interesting because it also the black cat also shows up in the Capitol building. And people believe when you see this ghostly black cat, it's a harbinger of something bad, like something bad is about to happen. to the nation. And so that's one of those stories. I didn't find any real concrete documentation of it, but it just goes around. You know, it's one of those things that people talk about. So that was another one. And then the president that served the least amount of time, William Henry Harrison, he died after like a month in office, and they think part of the reason is that he, during his inaugural address, which was the longest in U.S. history, it was a bitterly cold day, and he's out there just going on and on and on before the days of microphones, you know, and he catches pneumonia. you know, you can't say it's exactly from there, but I'm sure it didn't help. And he died after 1 month in office, having really never done anything because he was sick the whole time. And some have reported, like, they've seen his spirit rummaging through boxes up in the attic back before, you know, all the expansions and things like that. And that one, I think, calls to that part of us that just, you know, the unfinished business narrative. Well, there could be no president with more unfinished business than a guy that did nothing and then died.
Yeah.
You know? So so those are just some of the few that go around the building.
Has anyone had any sort of verbal interactions with the spirits? I know we talked about, you know, Mary Todd, but as far as, I guess, beyond that family and when they were actively trying to conjure up the spirit of their son, has anyone had anything documented or just a story of, yeah, I spoke with so-and-so, but they've been dead for years?
Yeah, not so much that, but there's a great story about Sir Winston Churchill, who stayed at the White House for a while when he was Prime Minister of England. This is during World War II, and he's doing lots of planning. And there's this this great story about how he was staying in the Lincoln bedroom, which is a place of honor. And he hears a knock at the door in the middle of the night and gets up in his bedclothes, opens the door, sees President Lincoln, and he famously says, you know, in his very dry British way, "Mr. President, you seem to have me at a disadvantage." And and that's a story that's gone around. Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands is another one that has allegedly seen President Lincoln when she was staying at the White House. So you've got these foreign heads of state that have had experiences. As far as like an ongoing dialogue, I haven't come across any, but I mean, so many presidents have discussed things. Ronald Reagan had an off the cuff remark once where someone, I guess it was Halloween or something, and he's walking his little dog, and they said, "Hey, have you ever heard about the White House being haunted?" And he had said, like, "Yeah, I heard about that." And you know, he said his dog would sometimes stand in front of the Lincoln bedroom and just bark wildly and then run off. So even President Reagan has this, you know, again, not a huge experience, but what's the dog barking at?
That wraps up part one of our interview with Jeff Belanger about the haunted White House. In part two of our interview with Jeff, we'll discuss, are there any malevolent ghosts lingering in some nook or cranny of the White House? What other U.S. government buildings are haunted in the Washington, D.C. area? Do the ghosts of the White House have a purpose or a mission? Has the Pentagon or any other area reported paranormal activity related to the 9/11 attacks? And how much time needs to pass before an area of tragedy can be investigated for the paranormal? We'll discuss all of that and more in part two of our interview with Jeff Belanger. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. That's what keeps our show on the air. This is a listener-supported show. When you become a Gravekeeper, you get access to every single part two of our interviews, plus access to our shows months before they're released to the public in their entirety. It's all there for you. It's only $5 a month, less than the cost of a cup of coffee. You get access to all of that. Check it out, patreon.com/thegravetalks, or go to our website, thegravetalks.com, and follow the link to become a Gravekeeper to hear part two of this interview and all of our interviews for only $5 a month. Please support our program and help us stay on the air. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi.
SpinQuest Social Casino. It's Thanksgiving time. The turkey's hot and the family's loud. Instead of football, play a different game on your phone. Live dealer blackjack, craps, and slots. play anytime, anywhere. SpinQuest.com. This Thanksgiving, gobble up a $30 coin pack for just $10. Come play today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
SpinQuest Social Casino. It's Thanksgiving time. The turkey's hot and the family's loud. Instead of football, play a different game on your phone. Live dealer blackjack, craps, and slots. Play anytime, anywhere. SpinQuest.com. This Thanksgiving, gobble up a $30 coin pack for just $10. Come play today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
SpinQuest Social Casino. It's Thanksgiving time. The turkey's hot and the family's loud. Instead of football, play a different game on your phone. Live dealer blackjack, craps, and slots. Play anytime, anywhere. SpinQuest.com. This Thanksgiving, gobble up a $30 coin pack for just $10. Come play today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
SpinQuest Social Casino. It's Thanksgiving time. The turkey's hot and the family's loud. Instead of football, play a different game on your phone. Live dealer blackjack, craps, and slots. Play anytime, anywhere. SpinQuest.com. This Thanksgiving, gobble up a $30 coin pack for just $10. Come play today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
SpinQuest Social Casino. It's Thanksgiving time. The turkey's hot and the family's loud. Instead of football, play a different game on your phone. Live dealer blackjack, craps, and slots. Play anytime, anywhere. SpinQuest.com. This Thanksgiving, gobble up a $30 coin pack for just $10. Come play today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.